Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987, and also editor of PWTorch.com and MMATorch.com, and host of this, the PW Torch Livecast. I'll be hosting the next 4 days. Tonight, it's right after Raw ended. Tomorrow night, right after SmackDown ends. Wednesday, the midday flagship at 1 p.m. Eastern, with Jason Powell making an appearance 1 week earlier than our normal every 3 week rotation. And then Thursday, Jim Ross joins me on Interview Thursday. Looking forward to catching up with Jim on everything that he's going on with his multifaceted post WWE career, including Access coverage or New Japan on Access TV. We've got weekly reports on that now at pwtorch.com. Really thorough reports, analysis, and orientation. Check it out at pwtorch.com to hear the matches that Jim Ross is, or to read about the matches that Jim Ross is calling, whether you have access to the show or watch it or not. Some really good stuff each week on Access, and it's worth checking out our reviews at pwtorch.com on that and all other shows, including Total Divas and 205 Live and much more. Lots of new features on pwtorch.com too, including some really good Raw preview articles with a new writer the last couple weeks. He's now going to also add SmackDown previews to his list, and so many other specialists that we're all kind of getting to know together as new writers with new features on pwtorch.com. So check out the site if you haven't been there in a while, and go click on the TV report section or the specialists section from our menu to read new features being added just about every week right now to pwtorch.com as we close out this year and get set up for a great 2017. One friendship may not be ending 2016 on a high note, and that's Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho. And man, it just, to me, if you want Chris Jericho to seem like he is in the right, that he's the babyface, fans seem to be cheering him, wouldn't you want him to be upset over something that legitimately Kevin Owens did wrong, as opposed to overreacting to a misunderstanding and blowing it out of proportion, given that there's seems to be more of a foundation to their friendship? And by the way, why do wrestlers always have the power to just have anything appear on the big screen that they want? But when they want to show a replay, when Kevin Owens would have an opportunity here, a reason to want to show Chris Jericho exactly what happened, so Jericho could lighten up a little bit and realize this was not what it appeared to be, and he's making too much of it, why is that video not available? Those questions and more I hope to answer with today's co-host, PW Torch columnist Pat McNeil. Pat, I believe this is you. Welcome to the Raw postgame show here at PW Torch Livecast.
Thank you, Wade. Hello, you people. I suspect that this is a giant conspiracy, you know, conspiracy on the part of WWE against Owens and Jericho. Mick Foley obviously told the director not to cut to the footage of Owens getting plowed into Jericho.
That would be about the only explanation that I think would make sense. Pat, were you sympathizing with Kevin Owens at the end of the show? Because I was.
I wasn't, and I think more to the point, I think the crowd was sympathizing with Kevin Owens. When the Philly fans saw Roman Reigns getting set up in the corner to spear Kevin Owens, they started booing. You think that alone would have cued Kevin Owens to the fact that Roman Reigns was in the ring, but apparently not. He was too upset about his argument with Chris Jericho.
Yeah. Strange ending to the program. Pat, overall, did you think this was a good episode of Raw, kind of middle of the road, or mixed bag, thumbs down? How do you assess it?
I thought it was a good episode, mostly because of the main event. You know, they actually set it up throughout the program. They built to it. It was a heck of a match, despite the fact that New Day had already wrestled. beat it. And that I think is what makes it into more than just another Raw show. The downer is we spent the whole show, you know, building up the New Day, and after that we got people excited about the New Day, and officially the New Day is not even wrestling on Sunday.
Oh man. And not only that, but this match, New Day officially becoming the longest reigning. Well, for all I know, there's something going on WWE Network right now where Stephanie's ordered another match, and we've got some sort of live extended version of Raw going on the network right now where New Day have to prove themselves once again. At least they're on the East Coast and not the West Coast, so they're down to about 48 minutes before Stephanie can't do anything to take this away from them. The downside on a slightly more serious note as far as this goes is New Day become the longest reigning tag team champions by almost accidentally Xavier draping his hand over Jericho's chest. It's not exactly this match where they were the center of attention, Pat.
Right, but they already won the match that they were supposed to have, and they, I guess looked okay doing it, although really you could say that Cesaro dominated the match and New Day just, New Day came through in the end. That's a good point.
It's one of my issues with New Day's title reign is, yes, I mean, they've held the tag team titles this long, Pat, but I don't really think, had they not made a big deal out of the length of the title reign, that people would have looked at New Day as having this great title run. And it's hard to compare eras because there's so much more competitive wrestling matches on TV now than in the Demolition era. But I think people looked at what Demolition did as a sense of that they were the best tag team dominating the opposition, and they were, the best tag team of their generation. New Day seems more like a sports entertaining trio who, because they're entertaining in this era of, social media and all, people on TV shows just going out of their way to admit, oh, yeah, it's all a show, to a degree we've never seen before, to the point that they don't even with a straight face talk about wrestling and winning and losing in all instances, even all that seriously within the confines of the show that they're on. I have mixed feelings about this because I love that New Day had a party. They celebrated. I think touting how long a title reign lasts is good. And I think making a big deal out of breaking a record is good. Whether it's Brie Bella or CM Punk and the number of days that he held the belt, that's all good. But I think that the team that sets the record should be a team that every once in a while the announcers, kind of talk about as actually being really good at what they do. And to throw in, someone on Twitter was like, I still don't understand why any two of them get to defend the tag team titles. There's just some farcical aspects to it that I think undercut what they're admirably trying to do, which is celebrate that there's a big tag team victory and a record being set by a team that a lot of fans like a lot. So just kind of mixed feelings on the overall presentation, Pat. Do you share some of those views, or do you think none of that matters in 2016?
Well, I share some of those views. I think that there were occasions that they probably could have taken the title off the New Day and maybe built up something. And I don't know how many, it's hard to remember all the great tag team matches that New Day was involved in over the past 16 months or so, because there weren't that many. There were some good ones.
Yeah.
But it's not like it's not like you're celebrating CM Punk's long reign where he fought everybody. And had to have good matches with him.
And never main evented unless he was fighting John Cena or The Rock, but that's a whole other,
problem with that ring. The New Day really didn't main event until tonight, so.
Well, there is that, although I would say there's not quite a history of tag teams headlining pay-per-views. With Punk, that was kind of an issue. He's the longest reigning champion, but I think Punk expressed, some frustration with this. He wasn't really the guy. In the way that things were framed, there was always some excuse for, I remember doing a cover story on this in the Wrestling Torch newsletter, looking at all the kind of plausible storyline reasons why Punk didn't main event virtually. He never main evented unless it was against, somebody Vince McMahon perceived as a bigger star. And they always kind of had a storyline reason for it along the way, but I thought that cut into what that record meant a little bit. And I think CM Punk feels that way too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also think part of Punk's issue was, as he said, he's supposed to be a main eventer, and he's not getting paid what the other main eventers were getting paid.
Pat, do you think Punk's going to wrestle for WWE again?
If he wants to.
Well, will it happen or not?
I don't know.
What are the odds? 10%, 90%, 50-50? It's a toss-up.
I've seen no indication that he wants to, and it's not going to happen until he has exhausted his MMA career, I'm pretty sure, and
yeah.
Maybe not even after that. I suspect that, you know, if I had to guess, I'd guess that maybe he wrestles again, and if he does wrestle, he wrestles outside of WWE.
Okay.
That's just a guess.
If you're joining us in progress here, we're live right after Raw here at PW Torch Livecast. .com. I'm Wade Keller, editor, joined by longtime Torch columnist Pat McNeil, and we're about to take your phone calls. So get in line on the phone banks, 515-605-9345, or you can email us too at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. If you are one of those people who, you know, on the East Coast, you watch Raw, don't have time to listen to the show right afterwards, but you listen the next morning at the gym or on your commute or whatever it is, but you have things you want us to discuss, you can be part of the show and help steer our conversation by emailing us during Raw, and we'll take a look at those emails and perhaps answer it or address it during the show. Again, that's pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. But the number right
and
now is...
And if you're on the West Coast, call Wade's house in 3 hours.
There you go, yes. By the way, if you are on hold and you push 1 on your touchtone phone, you should move into our caller queue. And that works for most people. However, we've talked to Blog Talk Tech, and they say, and they haven't figured out why it happens to certain people, but some people don't show up in the caller queue. We can search for your number and bring you onto the show. So if you're on hold a lot and we don't get to you, it might be personal, but it might not be.
Yep.
So the solution to that is email us, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com, and just include your phone number in the subject line. And if you can, tell us a topic you want to talk about, and that way we can do a search for you on the switchboard, even if you're not officially in the caller queue all lit up. So that is a solution if any of you out there are running into that. I don't know how widespread the problem is, but it is important that you push 1 on your touchtone phone if you want to be on the show, or email us. All right. With that business out of the way, we're going to go to our first commercial break. When we come back, phone calls and emails. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Pat McNeil, and we'll be back right after this message. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week, and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. We are back. This is the PW Torch livecast. I'm joined by PW Torch columnist Pat McNeil here on the Raw post show. Tomorrow we'll be perhaps talking about a new WWE World Champion. Pat, quick SmackDown note before we get to calls. Do you think Bruce asked me this and seems to be asking everybody this, including people on Twitter, Bruce Mitchell, is James Ellsworth going to be champion at the end of SmackDown tomorrow night?
No, don't think so.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past him, but I don't think so either.
Yeah, I really hope not. I would like to point out that New Day, you know, after midnight Eastern, they've only tied the record with Demolition. So technically, they could drop the titles during the taping for Tribute to the Troops and only be tied with Demolition.
Ah, okay. All right, let's go to the phone banks as promised, and let's begin with area code 908. 908, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Sharif from New Jersey. How's it going?
It's doing great. You said Sharif?
Yes, Sharif.
Cool, great. Thanks for calling, Sharif. What have you got for us?
No problem. Just wondering, personally, I don't like the triple threat tag team match format, and I don't know if you guys picked up on this in the first New Day match, but it didn't look like Kofi was the legal man in. I think Cole saying that Cesaro and Anderson were the legal guys out of nowhere. Trouble in Paradise. Kofi covers to the count. We never saw him tag, and they won the match. Did you guys notice that?
Uh-oh, Pat.
Not really, but I suppose they could. I suppose they could overturn it on a technicality, but that really wouldn't be very sporting of them, I don't think, of WWE.
And WWE has a rich history of the referee's call being final. There's not all that.
That's right.
Imagine if they opened that can of worms. Oh, you know what? We went back and we looked, and something was fishy or not quite on the up and up. We're going to have to reverse that decision, or, you know, I mean, my God, that's like, that takes away, you know, 99 out of 100 booking options for every match, practically.
Yeah.
So I'm not a storyline issue when it's a screw up, but, you know, it's just a inadvertent screw up by the wrestlers. If that happened, I didn't notice that it happened, but I'm not doubting you, Sharif.
Or something that will be pointed out next week. Yeah.
Could be. I mean, it doesn't seem like they even know, because I also noticed the referee in the first match, they said it was no disqualification. He was counting Gallows when there were two guys in the ring at once, and then the main event ref, Rod Zapata, when Chris Jericho came in, he wasn't counting him, you know, and it made me wonder, if it's a no DQ match, then who cares? Why wouldn't everybody just get in the ring at the same time and take care of business that way? But, yeah, I guess I'm getting too technical on that regard. Then the only other thing I wanted to ask you guys, all they did with Sasha and Charlotte was just run that promo package for their match.
Yeah.
Do you think it was a good call keeping them off TV just because we've kind of seen so much with that feud and them talking, or do you think having them live in the arena would have been better?
Sharif, what did you think of the video package? Let me ask that of you before we answer your question.
Honestly, I thought it was well done. I think it kind of summarizes how far back that this feud goes, and hopefully it's, you know, roadblock end of the line, and this will be the end of it. And it really makes me wonder, you know, with Charlotte having the streak of consecutive pay-per-view wins, you know, are they going to keep that up, or is Sasha going to get the redemption here and retain the title?
And, Pat, same question to you. What did you think of the video package? And then also Sharif's question, should they have had them actually appear on the show, or is that video package sufficient or perhaps even better than having them do another angle or talk about it again on the show with a fresh interview?
Yeah, I like the video package. I don't know that I would have – I mean, the problem with having Sasha and or Charlotte wrestle on the show is, you know, who are they going to wrestle? You've got unless you – bring in outside talent or enhancement talent, they're going to be beating somebody who presumably people care about. So I thought the video package was fine. It really didn't capture the breadth of their feud if you go back to when they were feuding in NXT.
Yeah. I think sometimes having wrestlers every single week talk, it puts a lot of stress on the writers just having to come up with something for them to talk about. And I think sometimes that leads to some of the worst segments when mm-hmm. there's really nothing more to be said. What's been, you know, the match is set up. They've effectively built anticipation. I think people want to see the match. And so in this case, I mean, I actually think not having Charlotte and Sasha out there has some benefits. You had a big angle on Raw last week to close the show. So to only do a video package and not have Charlotte come out or Sasha is it makes me wonder, are they seeing if they lose viewers or if there's some ratings power with Charlotte and Sasha? I mean, just this weekend, Pat, I asked Bruce this question and I addressed it too on our weekend VIP shows on the Wake Keller Hotline and the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show.
Mm-hmm.
Is Sasha the biggest star on Raw? Now, if we're asking that question, this can be a legit strategy. You know, we have nothing new to say. We're proud of what we did last week in the show closing angle. The heat is there. Let's just do a video package and not overexpose them and leave fans wanting more. I'm all for that. But I wonder, is there some politics going on here of, you know, sending a message to Sasha and maybe especially Charlotte, hey, you know, yeah, we put you in the main event for a couple weeks, but this show isn't all about you and we can still do a full show without you, especially if we have New Day wrestle twice. Pat, is any games going on in that respect, do you think?
I mean, there's always the chance that there's gamesmanship going on and how something gets booked. I thought, in all honesty, that they were doing them a favor by leaving them off this show. I noticed that they didn't really recap the angle from the end of last week, though.
That's interesting. Yeah, did the announcers address it, Pat? I don't remember.
I don't think they did. I don't think they did.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, it is, it's, I mean, Sharif, it's interesting to discuss on, okay, it was intentional with no ulterior motive. Was that smart? You can, we can have that discussion and go, yeah, it was maybe smart, but you can also go, what's up? Why not actually, you know, the segment that ended the show last week, why not do more with it? And it usually when there's a big angle at the end of a show, that gets talked about the next week. So, yeah, I guess I'm just kind of left more curious than decisive in terms of their decision making on the show as far as that match goes.
Yeah, I guess we'll see if they keep Charlotte's streak at pay-per-views going, too.
I know, yeah. And but it wasn't, yeah. I mean, if it's tough with New Day trying to break a record for the tag title reign to then be talking about another streak, and I think they might have felt, you know, we just want to focus on one thing. I'm not again. Sharif, thanks for calling. Anything else you want to say before I throw back to Pat?
Oh, nope, that's it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Cool, appreciate you calling. Pat, okay. I think we'll go. It sounds like you got something to say. I'll hold my thought.
Yeah, two things. Nick Picone sent a GIF on Twitter, which showed Kofi making the blind tag off of Anderson while Anderson was laying back in the corner. So Kofi was the legal man. And as for the triple threat match, I realize that Sharif don't like it, but I thought the match rocked the Casbah.
All right. I think with Charlotte and the pay-per-view streak and having victories, I think WWE can overdo it in talking about where streaks and record title reigns and what this wrestler does. I think it's a tool to use, but I also don't think you want to overdo it, because what can happen, and this is why I'm somewhat against streaks, undefeated streaks, I should say, is it books you into a corner. And if they make a big deal out of Charlotte never losing on pay-per-view, that's something they can use to their advantage. But it also is something that can kind of get in the way sometimes. And they can think, well, the right finish is this, but we've been making a big deal out of this, and maybe we want to pay that off later. So maybe we shouldn't do the finish that's logical, and you end up with a cop-out finish, or you change booking plans because they get too enamored with having that as kind of a selling point where they want to pay it off later. We had that a little bit with Braun Strowman. You know, here's a guy who's crushing everybody, Pat, and then you have Sami Zayn wanting to fight him. Mick Foley saying, no, you'll get destroyed. And it was all a ploy by Mick Foley to just bring out the beast in Sami and this drive and bitterness and determination. So Mick playing mind games. But the 10-minute challenge is a clever way for them to avoid the winning streak of Braun, the undefeated streak, the dominance of Braun Strowman. Now Sammy, to win, just has to last 10 minutes, and you can actually go through that match, I'm assuming, without an actual pinfall finish. Pat, what did you think of that storyline and the tease that Sammy would be traded, but it really was just Mick Foley trying to, you know, motivate Sammy and see if he had this side, this kind of part of his personality in him, and drawing it out?
Well, you know, I wasn't sure, because obviously I thought the finish was going to be that Sami Zayn had been traded to Evolve for Chris Hero, which did not happen, I'm afraid. But
Chris Hero putting on Twitter today that all the reports, and we had heard the same thing, that he had cleared medical and signed with WWE is premature. Now, I believe him. At face value, it's also possible, you know, he told somebody he wasn't supposed to when word got out, and now he's embarrassed because WWE wants to rebuild in their own way or something like that. But there's always that possibility. But right now, Chris Hero, not officially signed with WWE, according to a pretty good source, Chris Hero on Twitter.
Yeah, but sometimes when people who've signed with WWE do that, or people who have made an agreement to work for WWE, they've done everything except actually sign the contract.
Right.
So he can technically say he hasn't signed with WWE, and really we're going to find out in the next couple of weeks. So there's no rush on that.
I like the acquisition, but go ahead, Pat. I didn't mean to totally sidetrack us on Chris Hero just because of your quip about the trade, which would have been quite the announcement.
That would have been. I think that's more about, it's more about guaranteeing the fans, hey, this match isn't going to go more than 10 minutes, which, you know, I mean, let's be honest. We're glad that Sami Zayn and Braun Strowman don't have the 30-minute Iron Man match.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think 10 minutes is going to be a challenge. I think Jason Powell at ProWrestling.net made a comment that it's going to be an interesting seeing Braun, you know, if he goes full 10 minutes, what Braun looks like in a 10-minute one-on-one match. All right.
I try to avoid the 10 minutes as well. Yeah.
I'm curious to see it from a journalistic standpoint. How does he pull it off? All right, let's go on site to Matt in Philadelphia, who was at Raw tonight. Matt, appreciate you calling in. What have you got to share with us from being there tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hi, Pat. How you guys doing?
Doing really good.
We're good.
Good. Good. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah. Yes. If you're on speakerphone and can go to direct mic, that's better, but we can't hear you adequately.
Yeah, is that better?
Oh, yeah, that's way better. Yeah, less background noise cool. That way. Cool.
Yeah, so it's actually my first time calling into you guys. I'm actually traveling with work and just happened to be in Philadelphia, so I decided to go to the show tonight. The Philly crowd did not disappoint me. I know that they're always very boisterous, so I wanted to kind of get a firsthand view of it. The tag matches, like you were saying, you saw the GIF already, but it was clear being there that Kofi had tagged in, so that wasn't a problem from being there. I would say I got worked a little bit on the Sami Zayn thing, and maybe because I like Sami Zayn, and me and my buddy have been trying to kind of in our heads book Sami Zayn going to SmackDown and having some pressure matchups. So I got worked a little bit on that, and I realized halfway through Mick Foley's little spiel that he was kind of going to be a swerve, and he wasn't actually going to be traded, and he was going to give the Braun Strowman match. Not really sure how I feel about it. I was just listening to what you guys are having to say about it, and feels like one of those where Sami's going to, you know, give it his best shot, but he's going to ultimately get squashed by Braun. So not sure how I feel about that. I was upset that Sasha and Charlotte weren't there, although I don't think they needed to be there. It was just more so I wanted to see them.
Yeah, that's understandable.
And the crowd.
What about Emelina? Were you sad Emelina wasn't there?
Yeah.
Actually, when the vignette went up, I thought to myself, oh, yeah, she's debuting tonight. And then when it said coming soon, I was like, oh, well, there you go. I don't know if I was disappointed, but I don't know. We'll see where that goes.
Matt, speaking of you know, being led astray, a little bit of a bait and switch. We had that with Emelina. We had it with Sami Zayn being traded to SmackDown. We all had an hour or two to kind of imagine these great fresh matchups for Sami. Were you disappointed when the rug was pulled out from under you that you didn't get to see Lana and Rusev having sex on a giant screen in front of a family-friendly crowd?
Yeah, you know, there was a 7 or 8-year-old sitting behind me with his dad, and it was pretty interesting overhearing what they were talking about as that was going on. So I was kind of glad
it
didn't happen.
What were they talking about? How'd the dad handle it?
Probably better than I would have. I probably would have been more sarcastic about it, because the kid that wanted no part of it, he was probably angriest at Lana and Rusev the whole night and did not want any part of seeing that. And if I was the dad, I probably would have told him to wait a couple years. But the dad handled it a lot better than I would have. The dad was just like, you know, it's just too bad we're not going to see it.
Now, Matt, I want to get you on record. You say the kid is 7 years old, roughly?
Yeah, roughly.
So you're on record saying that you think the dad should have told him, wait till you're 9 to watch
pornography? No, that's why I'm glad I'm not a father yet. Because...
Gotcha. Okay. just listening carefully. Yeah. I want to get your position straight on record. All right.
Absolutely. I appreciate that.
Sure.
But, yeah, that was... that was an interesting segment. You knew obviously they weren't going to do anything crazy, but Lana's such a good heel that kind of draws you in and you never really know what's going to happen. They got some good heat.
Matt, when Cass came out, I didn't sense there was a big pop. Now, I don't always trust how the crowd is mic'd, but if that's the case, I would have thought, I mean, first you have you're not a Philly native, but is that because Cass is a Jersey guy, not a Philly guy? Or is it because Cass is defending somebody who tried to sleep with somebody else's wife and the sympathy lies with Rusev and Lana, a lot more when you just kind of step, if they stripped away the names and the history of the characters and you just said, oh yeah, there's this guy parading around backstage naked and he's not trying to cover himself up. And then a husband comes up and says, hey, cover up. And then that guy, a week or two later, besides that he thinks she's hot and he's going to sleep with her, simply, you know, yes, there was a little bit of entrapment going on, but nevertheless, you know, sometimes entrapment is a revealing test or revealing circumstance. I mean, of course, yep. Rusev and Lana are the good people here. So is that part of what happened here, or what was your sense?
I have more of a sense that they were just disappointed Enzo wasn't there.
Ah, okay.
There was a lot of how you doing chants in the beginning, and I feel like if Enzo was there, he probably would have got a pop, like always.
Yeah.
I just think they were wanting to do the bit, and they weren't going to do the bit. And I could be wrong, but that's just kind of the sense that I got from the crowd. But yeah, it's interesting. I've been listening, obviously, to you guys, and I agree with what you're saying, booking-wise, with Enzo and Cass, or with Enzo especially being sort of the heel in that situation. But Lana and Rusev do such a good job of getting heat that it, I feel like, sometimes can negate that anyway.
How was Roman's reception from the Philly crowd? And where, Matt, where are you from, actually? I don't know if you said.
I'm from Albany, New York.
Okay. So I don't know if you've been to WWE shows to compare the reaction to Roman in Albany, New York, or elsewhere, but what was your sense of the Philly WWE crowd's investment in Roman as a hero to cheer?
probably worse than a regular crowd, but
yeah.
Definitely anti-Roman, and you build up, and Seth's getting beat up, and Seth, for all the issues that Seth's had, still gets a good reaction when he comes out, and you know, for him getting, you know, beat up as badly as he was getting beat up, for the guy that's supposed to be coming out making the save, you know, to be booing him at this point, honestly, just booing him, I think, just because they hate Roman Reigns, it doesn't matter in the context of the story, but definitely anti Roman, about what I expected. I'm, you know, watched his responses in Philly before, notwithstanding when he won the title there last year, but every other response when he won the Rumble and everything, crowds against him. So
yeah, was the at the very end of the live Raw,
yep,
was the crowd starting to go, geez, Jericho, we like you, but chill out, it's a misunderstanding, and Kevin Owens is right, you need to listen to him and don't be so dramatic.
Yeah, I don't, it possibly could be that. I think for me, at least, I wanted more of a definitive, like I was waiting for one of them to beat the other one down, kind of, and definitively end it. They've been teasing it for so long, we don't know kind of which way to believe, and the crowd, I think, was just waiting for more of a moment to happen. This is kind of something that they've done before, and you kind of don't know if they're going to pull the rug out from under you again and team up, or if they're really going to break up, but they just kind of been teetering on in the middle ground, so it's hard to tell.
Well,
I think the crowd just wants kind of movement on it.
Was the crowd more pro Owens or pro Jericho or mixed?
Yeah, definitely Jericho.
Yeah.
When Owens came out, he was getting kind of more boos. I think some of the more hardcore fans of Owens are just going to cheer for Owens no matter what, but the majority of the crowd was booing him appropriately with his character, but Jericho was pretty much one of the bigger cheers of the night.
Try to think if anything happened either before Raw or after that you can report to us that did not air on USA.
So, well, the weird part was I got there a little late, so I don't know if this was announced in the arena. I was there about 7:50, and there was a cruiserweight match going on, and it had the 205 Live set and background on the screen. So I'm not sure if they're pre-taping it. I thought it was always live after SmackDown, but something to be...
Yeah. They pre-taped 205 Live before Raw started, and tomorrow's main event is Swan versus TJ Perkins in a non-title match, I believe.
Yep. And Pat, is that a new
policy
or an exception this week that they're having?
That's an exception because tomorrow they're taping Tribute to the Troops after they do SmackDown.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because a lot of people have made the argument the 205 will get a better crowd reaction if you're not doing it, you know, at the two and a half hour mark for the SmackDown crowd. But then, you know, you've got to put an asterisk next to live on 205 Live's logo if you're going to be as honest as WWE likes to be. So.
Right.
That was not a laugh line. Yeah. Why is everybody laughing? No, go ahead.
I don't know if this was because it was the third cruiserweight match of the evening, but crowd really turned on Perkins and Kendrick. I'm not sure if that came over on the TV or not, but a lot of chants, you know, for the Flyers. I think a CM Punk one broke out. The crowd just didn't care at all. It's kind of too bad. I mean, I can't say I'm the biggest fan of those two. I mean, I kind of like Perkins, I guess, but to me, I paid and you can pay and you can boo, but yeah, I kind of felt bad for the guys because they are trying to, they're working and they're trying to get a reaction. The crowd just couldn't care less what was going on in the match. Couldn't have got over sooner. If it was a 1 minute match, probably would have been too long for everybody. So I don't know if it was because that ended up being, well, if there was more 2-5 live matches, then that was probably the fourth or fifth cruiserweight match of the night, but it's no real heat. And
yeah,
what I thought was weird was Lince Dorado, they run packages for him on 205 Live, like coming soon, and then he comes out and, you know, no fanfare, no anything, his match doesn't even end. Although yeah. Gallagher's spot was funny, but just if you are trying to follow along with the Cruiserweights division, that's kind of not consistent, as I know you point out, Wade, and I agree.
A dated reference at this point, but, you know, if they had hyped Glacier for weeks and weeks or months and months or whatever, maybe it was 2 years of hype, and he shows up and, you know, without fanfare and just a 2 minute no contest match without a lot of fanfare. I mean, if you're going to hype somebody and you want people to see them as a star, you got to frame them and present them as a star and protect them. I agree. I kind of raised an eyebrow at that one. That seemed kind of weird. How was the reception to Bailey from the Philly crowd? And did you sense there were girls or little kids who were really into her, especially?
Yeah, I think down towards the front, maybe not necessarily ones that knew they weren't actually would interact with her, but she got a good reaction. You know, probably standard. It actually was. I was thinking about it because I was kind of trying to take it all in, and just kind of got me thinking. Like, she still gets this big of a reaction, and her character's not really going anywhere, so I hope WWE realizes it. Kind of like when Sasha came up, and for like a year, the crowd would just chant, "We want Sasha," and they didn't really do anything with her. So hopefully, the crowd stays behind Bayley because I don't know. I like her character. I think she's good.
Matt, one more question for you. Did you say whether there was a dark match after the main event, or was that the complete end of the show?
It was not.
Oh, interesting.
It was not. They announced that Raw was going to be coming back the Monday before the go-home show to WrestleMania in March.
Okay. Ah.
So they announced that, and they gave everybody a coupon or a promotion that they could get tickets early if they wanted. Yeah. So they kind of promoted that, and then they sent everybody on their way.
Interesting. All right. Anything else jump to mind, or shall we wrap up on that note?
Yeah, I mean, we'll pretty much wrap up on that. I was wanting to get your thoughts, though, on your boy Curtis Axel. He had his chance tonight.
He did. He blew it.
he did. It was funny. It was probably right.
And it's very disappointing to us here in Minnesota that Curtis Axel had his opportunity. I'm a little nervous about whether I should continue to endorse him for Bullet Club, but either him or Ari Daivari, you know, it's one of the two.
Yeah.
Minnesota should be in the next Bullet Club. A little reference to the Fixer. All right. Yeah,
all right, Wade, well, thanks for everything.
Is it Albany or Albany?
Albany.
All. Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought.
Yeah. All. Yeah.
Albany. Yeah. All right. Cool. Thanks, Matt.
All right. Thanks, Wade.
Cool. That's Matt Cullen from Philadelphia on a business trip. And what better way to spend an evening on a business trip than at Monday Night Raw? Keeps you out of trouble. The invite is out. If you attend SmackDown tomorrow, we'd love to get a call on the SmackDown post show. It's kind of a cool tradition that we're starting here. We want to build up our own streak, even though I was sort of bad-mouthing streaks about a half hour ago, Pat, 20 minutes ago. I'd like to get a streak going. It'd be cool to have every show somebody email us and let us know what number you're calling from and that you attended the show. And then we'll prioritize taking your call, as we did with Matt today, and get a first-person, in-person perspective on the program. So if you are attending SmackDown tomorrow night, drop me an email and let me know that you can call into the live cast on your drive home if you can do so safely. Pat, any thoughts on what Matt had to say before we go to our bottom of the hour break, as usual, 7 to 8 minutes late?
I'm just saying if you attend a house show on Friday night, be sure to call Bruce and Travis during the house show.
On your way there. Yeah, we've had that before. We've had people call for the parking lot of house shows on Friday nights for the primetime Friday edition of Bruce Mitchell and Bruce Mitchell and Travis Bryan show. All right, Pat, we did get Sharif. He did email and he did replay the match and he is officially confirming he was mistaken and Kofi did make the tag. He said it was so sneaky he missed it, but he agrees that factually speaking, Kofi was a legal man. So we can put to rest any concern that at least as far as we know that Stephanie has decided on a technicality that decision will not stand. All right. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to continue to roll through phone calls. You can call us at 515-605-9345. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Pat McNeil. Thanks for joining us. And here's some details on our sister website, MMATorch.com. Ronda Rousey making her return at the end of this month. There'll be a lot of talk about that in coming weeks over at MMATorch.com, along with daily updates and all kinds of good stuff. Here's some details. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. I encourage you also to support us when you shop Amazon. Instead of going directly to Amazon.com, go to PWTorch.com/Amazon. And when you do that, you'll see a link to many countries, not just the United States and the UK. We've expanded to Canada and other countries. Click on your link. Takes you from there right to the Amazon shopping page, the place you're headed anyway. But they know that you started on our page, and we get a commission. You pay the same price. We get a little bit of the profit that would have gone instead to Amazon. So it's an easy way for you to chip in and show support for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. That's PWTorch.com/Amazon. Pat, do you do any of your holiday shopping at Amazon? Oh, I got to put you on the air. There we go. Go ahead, Pat.
That would probably help. Yeah, I've been known to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So
Amazon. Yeah, it's a lot easier than going out to the malls the weeks before Christmas.
Yeah, I learned that. I was late covering Raw tonight because of that exact situation. I thought I could sneak. I thought I could leave the house for once and. All the snow we had over the weekend, I thought the lines wouldn't be that long, and I could get it done, and didn't quite get back.
You know, Wade, if you'd gone to pwtorch.com/Amazon, you could have done it from the comfort of your own home.
That is true. That is true. Very, very, very smooth, Pat. We appreciate that. All right, let's go to the phone lines and go to Patrick calling us. Patrick, where are you calling from tonight?
Hey, Wade, this is Patrick. I'm calling from Nutley, New Jersey.
Excellent. Appreciate you calling. What have you got for Padme today? This is going to be so confusing.
Well, one of the things I'm going to bring up to you is you were talking about how the tag titles haven't really been featured in the main event of Raw. I don't think they've been featured since the Rhodes beat the Shield way back in Chicago several years ago. I think that's probably the last time they actually were featured in the main event.
Wow. Remember that?
Yeah, when you said it just popped in my head. That I can't tell you. I mean, Dusty was still alive when it happened. I remember that.
Wow. Yeah.
But I was tweeting back and forth today to you. What I was going to say is, in the last 3 weeks, it seems like the WWE has done a great job elevating two of the titles. But in the same, the women's title and the tag titles, I thought like they actually seemed extremely relevant. And the participants in the matches seemed very relevant, as opposed to the other championships, which have seemed to be minimized over the last couple of weeks, or actually, you know, the Universal has been minimized since they turned Owens into a comedy character. I was wondering what your thoughts were about that.
Yeah, Pat, I'll let you start on that. not Kevin Owens is not the most prestigiously framed and presented heavyweight singles champion by any means. I mean, this is a rough title reign for him. I mean, he's a comedy figure begging for Jericho's friendship, and it just, I mean, the fact that he's Universal Champion is almost happenstance. I know he is, but it's not really his character. His character is not a champion. It's a prop that is part of the gag, I guess, that he claims that he and Jericho are co-champions, or Jericho says that too. I don't remember a championship reign where the belt seemed to mean less to the wrestler or have less focus.
And you know, it's funny.
Hold on, Pat. I knew it would be confusing. Patrick from New Jersey. Let's go to Pat McNeil. Pat, your thoughts on that topic?
Yeah, I think it all started when Owens didn't even really win the title. He literally had the match and the title handed to him by Triple H. And Triple H keeps getting called out, but it's Triple H is busy. It's the fall, so he's not even going to show up on Raw and defend himself or stick up for Kevin Owens. So Kevin's kind of left there on his own.
And back to New Jersey.
I'm
Patrick.
Sorry.
Yep, that's right.
Sorry about that. Even last week, when you think of the narrative they had written, the U.S. title, they had written the narrative that's the one championship Chris Jericho never had in his storied career. Even that, they were able to put into a proper narrative where it was elevated, that match with Jericho last week, where it actually seemed to have meaning. So I honestly, in the last 2 weeks, they've done a really good job of framing, telling a good story as to why they care about the championship or the people in the main event. So I thought that was a very good job on the part of WWE. Unfortunately, like I say, it's not their tentpole title, one that they should be framing in that regard, but they did a good job at that. But the other thing I was going to say to you is I found it ironic because it's been a year this week when Roman Reigns actually won the championship in Philadelphia against Sheamus, where they actually got him cheered in Philly. And I think this is the first time I ever saw Roman on the outside of the ring where I was waiting to hear them say Roman's sleeping. I don't think they said it once today. And he was outside. I was just waiting for that call. And I was like, they did not make that call once. So I was kind of taken aback. So maybe he has come far in the last year because they were so into the action. No, I'm kidding, but I'm not. They were so much into the action that wasn't dominating. It wasn't about being negative. They were actually into the championship and into the participants in the ring, which, with the crowds usually taking over the night, as with the chants, I think that's actually a good sign for the WWE, to be honest with you.
I think it's a really good observation. Pat, did you sense that the crowd just was into the three teams in the ring and what was at stake? It's more of a challenge sometimes when you've already seen the wrestlers in a match wrestle, and New Day wrestled earlier, and they had a segment, lengthy segment of multiple appearances from Jericho and Owens. Cesaro and Sheamus were fresh, but did it seem like the crowd maybe was so into the tag match they didn't have a chance to express their dislike for Roman Reigns?
Yeah, and that's rare because normally on any given week of Raw, after 3 hours, the crowd's a little, they're a little bit worn out. And then you had 3 hours plus they taped an hour of 205 Live on top of that. So, that was a challenge. But, you had the four biggest names on the Raw brand that they could put in there, and the New Day, who people seem to like. And, they couldn't really have asked for there was a lot at stake. They couldn't have really asked for a bigger match, I guess, for the go home show.
Patrick, well, I know one of the times you called, or I think we said that you sound like a certain TV character. Do you remember? Was that you?
Yeah, it is.
Now, first, I want listeners who didn't hear that show to think about your voice and then see if they can guess who we're talking about before we reveal it.
You can reveal it. I won't say it. That's fine.
I'll reveal in like 10 seconds. But what I want to know is, did you go and listen to that character like on YouTube or something? And do you see the resemblance or hear the resemblance?
I didn't, but I've been compared to like two different characters. So it's all right. I mean, you could say it in 10 seconds. But there is one subtle thing I saw tonight that I wanted to point out that almost assured that the crowd was going to be into the last match.
Yeah.
Nobody, I haven't heard you mention it, but it was so subtle, is when Xavier came out and mentioned his grandmother in the beginning, and the crowd started chanting, "Grandma, Grandma, Grandma," and then he came and wrestled in the last match. The crowd was supposed to be behind him, and like I say, it's subtle. I don't know if he pulled the John Fair play, where it never really happened, or if it was legitimate, but it was so subtle, and so he had the crowd, and it was just that psychology of flipping that one thing in, that the crowd was going to be behind him that night, because they already respect him as a worker, but he gave them a reason. And I always thought, like I said, I tweeted you 10 minutes after the first match when Stephanie got splashed in the face. I said, they're going to set up a second match, and I tweeted you that tonight 10 minutes later. But, I just seemed like they were going to do anything in their power to get Xavier into one of the matches tonight, because the New Day's pretty well over in Philadelphia, I mean, in my opinion. So I just thought they were going to do that. Did you pick up on that subtlety?
I did not think when the grandma comment was made that was going to necessarily carry over 3 hours later in a second match. As far as the match itself and whether that was going to lead to a rematch, I, watching it, thought, wow, that finish came quickly. That didn't feel like quite the full-fledged match that I was expecting. And immediately, you know, I didn't know how they'd get there, but I thought, okay, similar to your tweet, I think that we're probably going to see some sort of technicality. It was just a matter of time to see what it was, and then Stephanie getting sprayed with champagne led to New Day almost not being part of the history books, Pat. What did you think of – I don't even know if we talked about this, that larger story arc. But anything, do you want to respond to what Patrick said about the grandma comment, Johnny Fairplay, perhaps being inspired by Johnny Fairplay, and the way that they built to that second match? Pat McNeil.
Well, I know nothing about the status of Xavier's grandmother. I think because it's the New Day and they often include, you know, little pieces of their life in their promos that people just assumed it was true, and I have no reason to doubt it. And I did think of Johnny, of course, when Xavier did that. If it had been it could have been a shocking swerve, and they could have had Xavier's grandmother come out during the match, but they didn't. So
just so I don't forget to say, Patrick, I believe, sounds like Badger from Breaking Bad. If you guess that, then we're on the same page. Patrick, appreciate the call.
Oh, thanks. And one last thing, if I can.
Yeah, sure.
I thought McNeil said this on air. If they want to make Seth Rollins sound any less cool, him dropping the name Doris Day in the promo totally seals it. Totally seals the Doris Day reference. If you did not think they were cutting him off at the legs, having him reference Doris Day totally made it sound like Vince McMahon truly was writing Raw, which is something I told you before.
Now, Doris Day was born in 1924, but she is a contemporary in the sense that she's still alive. I mean, she's still part of, you know, she's not part of the past, at least according to Wikipedia.
But is she from Philly that they would get the reference? I'm just curious.
She was born in Cincinnati, so who knows? I don't know. I don't have all the answers, Patrick, but I appreciate your call. Call again. Let's go to our next call. Our phone number, by the way, if you want to try to sneak in on the show, is 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. We'll now go to area code 917. 917, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys. How's it going? This is Doug from New York City.
Hey, Doug.
Hi,
are you a first-time caller?
I've called a couple of times, you know, sporadically here and there, but I'm a big fan of the show. I think both Wade and Pat, you guys do a phenomenal job, so kudos.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Awesome.
Well, thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, so I agree with a lot of what Patrick, who does indeed sound a lot like Badger, has to say. I think that the main event did a really solid job of getting New Day the kind of sense of importance that they've been lacking. They had some fresh opponents and, you know, big name opponents to go up against. So I thought that was solid, and I would agree with him on that. But what I did see exposed more than ever is between Rollins, Reigns, Jericho, and Owens, it seems like Roman Reigns is the kind of cog in the entire storyline that is it's hard to direct him in a certain way, and as a result, everything around it is convoluted. So I'm just wondering, I mean, and I think it was really obvious when you saw him holding up both title belts, you saw Reigns holding up both title belts, and it kind of made the show end on like a strangely sour note, even though you'd think if a lead babyface was holding up two title belts, one that he hadn't won yet, the crowd would be going crazy, you know, they would be cheering him. I mean, obviously, we know what's going on with Roman Reigns in terms of his crowd reaction. But my real question is, I'll get to the point here, is how do you guys think they can redirect Roman Reigns' character going into WrestleMania, which they're clearly starting to gear up towards? Who should he feud with? Any ideas of where they could take this with Roman? And beyond that, how do you think the Rumble will be structured given the two brands, just to branch out a little bit from that point?
Now, do you have anyone in mind, Doug, that you're thinking of for Roman Reigns in particular that you think might be up next?
Just the idea that you and Al Snow talked about last week on Interview Thursday of big money drawing guys, like, you know, how that's sort of separate from the common thread of main roster guys both on both brands. The only match that I could see really making Roman Reigns have a huge splash at Mania is to go up against Cena. And I know that's two brands that are clashing, but I think just the sort of the money drawing big name power of Cena against Roman Reigns in a Mania main event could be a really big thing for him, for Reigns, that is.
Yeah. Pat McNeil, your thoughts on that topic.
Well, they've talked about doing that before, the whole Reigns and Cena thing. If they're going to do Cena and Undertaker, they're obviously not going to do Reigns and Cena. I'd want to know what Undertaker's health is and his status is going to be beforehand.
Braun, or we can do Undertaker and Kane against Orton and Bray. Those are, I think, serious options Vince would consider worthy of Undertaker also.
I guess it wouldn't be the worst, but
yeah.
If you're doing singles, I think you almost have to, I mean, I think you're almost back to Reigns versus Ambrose, because Ambrose is sort of stuck in that limbo there. Or if you want to have a good match, we could, you know, now that we could go to Shield versus the Wyatts again, except with Randy Orton there instead of Eric Rowan.
Yeah, I think with in terms of what's up next for Reigns, I'm kind of thinking, Seth, that if Reigns wins the championship and Seth Rollins is talking about wanting to face Triple H, is there a way, Pat, for them to get somehow the Universal title over to Seth so that the match has even higher stakes and Triple H can justify positioning it, you know, very high on the card, if not in the main event? Or if they do Seth Hunter and they do it at WrestleMania, do you think the odds are that the Universal title is not involved? Because that affects a lot of other things. And right now, Seth is overtly 2 weeks in a row talking about wanting Triple H, and that seems like the match that didn't happen last year. It's probably going to last WrestleMania. Now it'll happen next WrestleMania. And if that's the case, then you are left looking at Roman for – I don't love any of the options, you know, of Roman I should say, not only, I think Roman Cena is a big match for Roman. I'm not sure there's another match for Roman that I think is all that great for Roman Reigns. So tying into the question, Doug's question, then you could have Cena win the Rumble, and the sweepstakes would be, does he choose to face AJ, which the face that runs the place, or does he go after Roman Reigns? And if so, for what reason? I mean, what reason would Cena have if he won the Rumble to choose to switch brands? So I don't think it's clear yet. I don't really know what the clear path is.
Well, if you're going to look at a worst case, scenario, it could end up being Roman versus Rollins versus Triple H at WrestleMania.
Yeah. Let's hope that doesn't happen. As much as I don't like triple threat matches, and WWE does, we seem to unite when it comes to WrestleMania. That seems to be where they do understand one-on-one.
That's where they draw the
better
line. Yeah.
Yeah, they understand three ways are kind of a cop out, and Mania it's about one on one matchups that you can really focus on. When you look at the Raw roster, Roman Reigns has feuded with Rusev. Roman Reigns could also feud with Braun, so they could either bring back the Rusev feud or go with Braun. I'm trying to think of another strong heel on the Raw roster that would be in Reigns' league if Reigns won. Now, granted, we always think they have to come up with something new. We could just end up with 6 months of Roman Reigns, Kevin Owens rematches too, unfortunately.
Roman Reigns versus The Rock. Of course, Roman would be the heel there. And I'm having a hard time thinking of something where Roman Reigns wouldn't be the heel, I guess, is the problem.
Yeah. Well, you would hope that his fans would cheer him against Braun. But would people actually cheer Braun over Reigns? I mean, Reigns, I don't know.
Yes.
I don't. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they would. Absolutely. I mean, I'm not even going to hesitate on that one. Samoa Joe.
Yeah, that's the thing. Could you bring somebody new in, and Joe might be a good opponent for Reigns as a badass heel that comes in and he wins the Rumble, makes a big splash, and they put him over big as the Rumble winner. I could see WWE. I mean, I could see Vince deciding to do that. We got to create a star, and Joe's paid his dues, and he's. Been a good soldier in NXT, and let's shoot him to the top and get a fresh opponent for Reigns. Especially Vince would do that, especially if he thought that Joe can be a really good heel who the fans would boo against Roman. Now, the problem with that is fans are going to cheer Samoa Joe, but Vince, don't tell Vince that. Let's not tell him that.
I won't.
All right.
I promise.
Doug, I don't know if we answered your question well or not. If you're looking for this decisive, obviously this is the next guy for him. I don't think that pops out to me right now.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's confusing and convoluted, but I do think that we made some progress, at least in our little think tank here, as far as Samoa Joe would at least provide a fantastic match. I think that would be a really heavy hitting, stiff, enjoyable match between those two.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'd like to see it. I mean, I hope Chris Hero finalizes everything with WWE and he can become a centerpiece of NXT, and that can free up Joe and Nakamura and eventually Robert Roode and maybe even Ty Dillinger as kind of heavyweight additions to NXT, or heavyweight additions from NXT to the main roster. And but you know, not all at once, because I bet Ty stays in NXT for a while. But Hero is the kind of guy who can go in and kind of fill that spot that Joe and Nakamura might leave empty. All right, cool.
The forgotten Shield member, yeah.
Oh yeah.
The Shield member that never was.
That's
the fourth Shield member. That's it.
That could be his storyline.
Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Let's let him be in NXT for 2 years first. Doug, anything else?
Exactly. No, that's it. I just, you know, I think Roman Reigns has done a fantastic job of becoming very charismatic and central to the show, but he's so miscast, as you would say, Wade, that we're not really sure what to do with him.
Yeah.
Anyways, thank you guys for taking my call, and keep up the great work.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Oh,
hope you call
you
more often. Thanks, Doug. All right, Pat, question for you. Mike McMahon put up an editorial on PWTorch.com today asserting that Kevin Owens was not in the wrong when he confronted a 7-year-old fan wearing a Roman Reigns t-shirt, speaking of Roman Reigns and his fans, and telling him that he shouldn't wear that shirt. He should wear a Kevin Owens shirt. And he goes, no, you shouldn't wear my shirt. I don't want you to wear my shirt. And he was, you know, just cut a heel promo on a kid with his parent at a WWE house show. The parent is upset. I am flabbergasted that somebody could take a 7-year-old to a wrestling event and believe that it's going to, I mean, what's a 7-year-old doing at a wrestling event? You know, I mean, that's at Enzo and the sex tape and all the, and it's just violent and to have all, it's like, and I get that WWE wants to, as Linda McMahon infamously put it, they want to have a cradle to grave strategy. So, you know, they want Doris Day to still be a fan. Maybe that's the reference. They really are going cradle to grave here, making it into the 90s demographic. But I'm sorry, Kevin Owens was doing his job. I am just, Pat, talk me off the ledge here. What's going on in wrestling where a heel can't say something like that to a fan without a parent getting all upset?
Well, here's the problem with that, Wade. You've convinced the fans that it's all a show. Nothing matters. So instead of getting outraged at Kevin Owens for saying the mean things in front of my kid, you have them getting angry at WWE for hey, you got to tell these guys, you know, not to upset my kid. I mean, you know, we can't have it doesn't make sense. It's part of the changes to society. When, you know, when we were kids, it was okay that the movie Bambi was on and kids got upset when Bambi's mom died, spoiler alert. You know,
hey.
And I mean, today there'd be parents complaining to Disney about how could you show that? What's wrong with you? You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. Wait, I'm sorry, but you know, yeah, Kevin Owens was in the right, and you know, if somebody took their 7-year-old to Raw last week, their kid got to see a snuff tape on the big screen there. That must have been really helpful.
I'm curious if it, because sometimes, you know, there's my way of looking at the wrestling industry, and I think that there's certain things that are, you know, sort of timeless aspects of it, and a heel getting to get heel heat by, and again, it wasn't like he was crude or physically threatening. A heel should be able to look at a kid in a crowd and say, go buy this shirt, pointing at the shirt he had on. And then he says, no, you know what? Don't go buy this. Don't go buy the shirt. I don't want you to ever wear a Kevin Owens shirt ever. Don't you ever try to touch me. And then the child's mother says, oh, he has a drawer full of everyone's shirts, but he chose to wear a Roman Reigns shirt since he's been a fan of his ever since he started watching. All night he's getting high fives from other wrestlers, but for some reason Kevin Owens came out and singled out my son and commented on
for
the shirt
some
he
reason.
Was wearing. Yeah. I'm just like... I just hope WWE just told that parent, you need to just move on. No free tickets, no free t-shirts, no public apologies. Oh God. I hope it's a wake up call to WWE that they've actually got fans now thinking it's such a show that even the heels are supposed to make my 7-year-old who shouldn't be at a wrestling show because he's too young to be seeing people beating each other up. And,
well,
you know,
we're competing with the Harlem Globetrotters and Disney on Ice. Wait, that's what it's all about.
Anyway, go check out Mike McMahon's take. It's at pwtorch.com. I think he did a great job on this topic, not only because I agreed with him, but I think he did a good job, really good job in pointing out why he, also a father of a 7-year-old, as am I, in first person terms. I really recommend people check it out. We also have the best and worst of the week, a new pwtorch.com feature by Andrew Susek, who the 5 worst people or things in pro wrestling were last week and the 5 best. Check that out. That is at pwtorch.com, or of course VIP members get the ad-free version at pwtorchvip.com.
I lost audio. Okay.
Along with the Raw ones that we've had up for many, many, many years, the hits and misses list. So lots of cool stuff over at pwtorch.com. Not just news, not just results, although we got both of those for you, but also some new specialist features. Let's go next to we got more people on hold, but let's go to I believe this is Jason from Australia. Jason, is this you?
Yeah, it is, Wade. Thanks for that.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah, glad to hear from you again. What have you got for us
today?
Yeah,
no problem. First of all, a little bit disappointed that Pat ruined Bambi for me, but I'll get over that. Thanks for that spoiler. Yeah. But I just wanted to say I was enjoying the Rusev and Lana segment until Kaz came out, and I think the issue with him for me is that he's concentrating too much on speaking with that slow, fake American-Italian accent. I think that's a little bit of a disconnect. I would have preferred him just to charge to the ring and take Rusev out. I think they've got to be careful with him because you can really tell that he's concentrating on enunciating all his words correctly and coming across like that American-Italian. But there's a little bit of a disconnect for me there. With the final tag match, I really enjoyed that tag match, and I thought the person who got put over the most was Xavier Woods. He had a couple of strong spots with the elbow. He got out of the walls of Jericho. I thought they actually did a really good job of showcasing Xavier Woods. And Corey Graves went out of his way to say that, you know, he is a bit of a, you know, a bit of a powerhouse, and, you know, you shouldn't take him for granted. So I like that part. And just the other thing I wanted to comment on was Sami Zayn. I'm enjoying this segment that he's having with Mick Foley, and I like the framing of him sort of being like Mick, and Mick drawing that that badass personality out of him. And the reason why I like this is that it's giving Sami Zayn some meat to his character. It's actually giving him something as opposed to just coming out there and winning or losing a throwaway match. So I like the fact that they're investing in him. And just one more point, with our Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, the one thing I don't like about this pairing, well, first of all, for Rollins, he's getting that Roman Reigns stigma. But the other thing I don't like is that Roman Reigns is too forgiving of Seth Rollins after everything he's done. You know, all of a sudden, these two have become buddy-buddy again. I don't think that helps Seth Rollins' character because Reigns is too forgiving of him, and it doesn't help Roman Reigns' character. I don't like them walking in the hall together. To me, the water hasn't gone under the bridge yet. So I feel like when they just put them together because they're baby faces and they have a past, I don't really like that. I would like Reigns to be acknowledging what Rollins did in the past and sort of having a bit of integrity to his character that he's still a bit wary of Rollins. So what do you think of that?
I wish WWE owned their history always, not just when it's convenient. I don't think Seth and Roman, either of them, have been booked particularly strongly. If Roman Reigns was popular and, you know, well-liked by, you know, everybody or the vast majority, it'd be fine, I guess, how he's being pushed. I wouldn't have a lot of complaints about it. But I think it does hurt Seth that, you know, and Roman, that they just, you know, they're just kind of hanging out. Now, I actually went, when the match was made by Mick Foley, or he added them to the match, I was curious about the camera hovering on them and what kind of reaction that they'd have to being put together as a team for the tag team titles. And I think what they gave us, and it was probably, you know, in the script or produced that way, is nothing. They were neither excited nor leery. They just were, you know, Roman looked at Seth, Seth looked at Roman. We didn't really get a nod. We didn't really get an emotion. I think it was meant to be, it was almost, I think perhaps meant to not make us wonder if they would get along, because WWE doesn't want us to think about that. They've already been reunited a few other times, you know, the Shield reunion at Survivor Series. I mean, they've had their moments. So I think now we're just supposed to think, yeah, bygones be bygones. They're just getting along. It might be because they have a history together that's greater than the just, you know, a history together more than they have a history apart. Or it could be that we're just supposed to think they have a they're united due to common enemies. But I think it should be a bigger deal than it has been made out to be. It almost feels, Jason, like happenstance to me.
Well, of course it should be a bigger deal because I invested so many previous months into establishing, you know, the hatred between these two. I mean, these guys had a bitter rivalry, as did Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. Now, I can understand coming together in the heat of the battle to take someone out. But remember that camera shot, they were walking backstage like they were best friends. To me, this is just sort of sweeping everything under the carpet, and it makes us not invest into the story that they're trying to tell. And you know, like you said with Seth Rollins, I mean, just having him hang around Roman Reigns and be friendly with him, it's not really helping him. But I will note one of the other things that I noticed on SmackDown is that Bray Wyatt cut a promo last week talking about now that they've got the World Tag Team Champions. That, you know, it enables them to take on everyone, like they've got all the power in the world. And we've seen, like, an emphasis on the tag team championships on Raw. So, as a previous caller said, it's almost like on both brands, they are, in a way, trying to go out of their way to portray that the tag team championship is really important. But then on the flip side, it's like they can't walk and chew gum at the same time. You know, the World Heavyweight Championship on SmackDown, you've got that James Ellsworth in that title picture making a mockery of it. And Kevin Owens has been thrown by the wayside with his Universal title. So just, I find it interesting with the situation that they're at the moment with promoting these championships.
Well, I think if we come out of 2016 with a new Universal Championship that starts to get rebuilt because Roman Reigns is the champion and Vince starts, you know, taking it seriously and treats the belt as a defining trait, as opposed to with Kevin Owens, which is the defining trait of Kevin Owens is more his friendship with Jericho. If we get back on track with that, and you can say, well, but it sucks that Roman Reigns has to have the title. If you're not a fan of his, for that to happen, it should happen with Kevin Owens. I certainly agree with that. But if they get back on track with that, and they have the women's championship in a position that is higher than I think it's ever been, and now the tag team championships, even though I earlier in the show I said I don't think New Day have had a tremendous run of great matches, and I don't think that they've ever just sold them as Pat, you know, heck, look at what Paul Heyman did with the Eliminators in ECW, or God, there's so many examples of where a tag team champion was portrayed by the promotion as the greatest tag team of all time. ROH billed the Briscoes, have billed the Briscoes as the greatest tag team in the industry, and the Young Bucks, I believe Kevin Kelly declared a week ago Friday at the ROH final battle that they were the best. Now the Young Bucks prove they're the best tag team. And with WWE, they talk about the record length of the title reign, but they don't talk about New Day as being the greatest tag team. It's more they've held the belts the longest, but they don't really talk about them, nor can they, I think, credibly do so as the greatest team. It, with the asterisk also that they got to kind of cheat a little bit. Not only did they literally cheat to retain their belts recently a few times, but you have Xavier as a guy who normally plays the trombone, but sometimes is wrestling, and you have the whole Freebirds rules thing. If we can come out of this with the tag belts meaning more, because WWE, even though New Day are flawed as the record-holding champions in certain ways and how they've been framed, if the tag belts mean more, I think that's a good thing. I mean, I've always thought the belts don't get injured, they don't retire, they don't hold you up for more money. You know, when they replace other places to go, I would say, you know, they don't go to the rival promotion. The more valuable that you can make those title belts, then you can use the belts to make the wrestler instead of have the wrestler make the belt. And I think WWE imperfectly is taking strides in that direction, Jason.
Yeah, I definitely see what you're saying there. But, you know, just the fact, as a previous caller said, that, you know, we had Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho, along with Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, the top four guys on Raw, competing with the New Day, and the New Day getting a victory. And I thought a showcasing performance by Xavier Woods does put those tag belts at a higher level. And just quickly, Wade, just one more point.
I was a step forward for New Day in that respect, yeah.
Yeah. And just one more point with the Cruiserweights. I mean, I think Tom Martin brought this up initially like a few weeks ago. I feel sorry for the Cruiserweights because, with the crowd, I can understand why they're not paying them too much attention or giving them the reactions that they deserve because, you know, a lot of the main event wrestlers are wrestling like the Cruiserweights. When you see a 280-pound Kevin Owens do a flip in the air into a leg drop, that's pretty damn impressive. There's not really much more that a 205-pound guy can do that would impress me more than Kevin Owens doing this move. There's a lot of heavyweights that are wrestling like the traditional Cruiserweights, and that's my concern, that the crowd are like, well, why should I be impressed by these guys when I'm seeing it with the heavyweights? It's not like back in WCW where there was a distinct difference between the Cruiserweights and the heavyweights, say, in WCW. So that's my main issue there. I almost feel like they're on a hiding to nothing, the poor Cruiserweights.
Yeah, I mean, there was a time where doing cruiserweight moves made you stand out more. And yeah, when you have the Universal Heavyweight Champion doing a lot of the same moves and doing so with a higher impact, a cannonball or a running flip splash, and others, I mean, others doing those moves too, dives through the ropes, you know, Dean Ambrose doing it, it is harder to stand out, and it is a bit of a handicap for them. Let's bring Pat into the conversation. Do you think that because so many heavyweights are doing flashier moves than say during the Nitro era when the Cruiserweights were given a somewhat prominent spot on that show, that it actually makes it tougher for the Cruiserweights to get over?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I still think the worst culprit of all is you know, when the Cruiserweights are treated like people who deserve a pat on the head for being such good kids. Like when they opened the first episode of 205 Live with everybody standing on the stage, you know, like it's the first week of the original NXT, and you're waiting for their pros to come out and for them to start running the obstacle course. I mean, if they start treating them more like stars, then they're going to, you know, then the fans are going to follow suit, I think. But it doesn't help when it's not even WWE. I mean, you and I saw Final Battle, Wade. You know, Donovan Dijak is out there doing the same moves the other five guys in the X Division match are doing, and it's like, you know, dude, why don't you work on being big for a while? See how that, you know, I mean, we know you can do those moves. It just, you know, try doing what's going to work for your frame, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, in Hernandez and TNA, would, you know, they had a real big deal out of a guy his size being able to do that move. And, you know, sometimes you're better off as a big wrestler not doing those moves. And I know, you know, like Bam Bam Bigelow, I was never a fan of him doing the moonsault. I didn't think that it fit his character to do it. It made me look at him differently. And I don't think, I mean, you're like, wow, what a great athlete. This guy can do a moonsault. But I can't imagine like Bruiser Brody or, you know, Stan Hansen, to, you know, quote JBL's favorite historical wrestlers to reference.
Yeah.
You know, I can't imagine them doing a moonsault because it would have not fit their character. It's not, as Steve Austin says, it's not their brand. I'm not against Kevin Owens doing it on the indie scene. I'm not even against him doing it in WWE because he is a bit of an undersized heavyweight height-wise. I'm maybe against him doing it as a heel because it's kind of a babyface type move. But, Pat, what are you going to say?
Yeah, well, you got to remember that when Bam Bam Bigelow did it, it was a reaction to Vader having done a moonsault. And I think that he got pushed because he was about the same size as Vader into doing it for WWE so they could make fun of Vader doing it.
Yeah. Jason, I appreciate the call. Any closing words for us? We're running low on time here on our show.
Yes, no, sorry about that. Just on that point, I remember Stone Cold doing the podcast with Ryback, and Ryback was talking about, you know, increasing the amount of moves in his repertoire, and he talked about going to the top rope and giving a drop kick, and Austin was like, "Man, you're 280. Why are you going to the top rope for?" And Ryback was almost like, "Well, I've got to do this to try and get more over." And just one more closing point: as far as I'm concerned, Bayley has to always be in that first hour. That 8 to 9 slot is for Bayley. You find a place for her in that 8 to 9 slot. That, to me, is just a no-brainer and a given every week. It has to be written in the format.
Great, great point, Jason. Appreciate it, as always. Yep. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us today. Pat, really appreciate you joining me today on the PW Torch Livecast post-Raw edition. We already got your prediction on Ellsworth Styles for tomorrow night.
Come by on Sunday, everybody. Drop by after Roadblock.
Absolutely. We'll have our live post-game show here at PWTorchLivecast.com immediately following Roadblock. Prior to that, I'll be hosting the SmackDown post-game show tomorrow. Thanks to all our callers. Sorry to those we didn't get to. I know a few of you even dropped off as the show progressed here. We just didn't get to all the callers we had on hold, but we appreciate those of you who we did get to. We will get to some of you who we didn't get to on the next show. So feel free to give us a call tomorrow. Pat, as always, pleasure, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Wade, and it's always good talking to you people. We will do it again.
Sounds good. That's Pat McNeil. You can read a lot of his writing over at pwtorch.com and in the PW Torch VIP site in the archives. Lots of columns over the past 15 years or so from Pat McNeil. Let's tell you about our VIP membership as we close the show. If you want to get in on all the content that we offer in the vast majority of what I do during the week, believe it or not, even hosting the live cast 4 days a week, the majority of what I do is VIP exclusive. Various VIP shows. I host the Wade Keller Hotline and other VIP exclusive shows, including post pay-per-view roundtables, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, The Fix with Todd Martin, the VIP after shows that are exclusive to VIP members, like the final 30 minutes of the Al Snow interview last week, or the final segment of the Magnus interview, or the Sean Waltman interview from Interview Thursdays. And also there'll be a VIP after show on Wednesday when Jason Paul joins me here on the live cast. You can get on board with all of that. It is iPhone and Android friendly. If you have a podcast app that you use, you can subscribe to the live cast on that, but we are also compatible with popular podcast apps on iPhone and Android. Our VIP audio feed is, but you have to have a membership to access all of that. Plus we've got our ad-free mobile website, pwtorchvip.com, which looks just great on the iPhone and Android phones, and takes away all the ads and gives you exclusive articles, access to every Saturday, our 20 years ago back issue of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, which is fascinating to read in an all-text format or PDF format. Somebody today just on Twitter put up a little video of them scrolling or flipping the pages on and pinching and zooming on the PW Torch newsletter on their tablet. So many benefits come with the VIP membership, including nearly 30 years of archives of newsletters and audio shows, including old retro radio shows from the 90s. So here are some more details on all of that. And then after that, go sign up. It takes about 30 seconds and you just go to pwtorch.com/govip. It's mobile friendly, and you're in the door, and you unlock nearly 3 decades of content and exclusive content every day. Here we go with some more details. Thanks, everybody. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host 3 other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to pwtorchvip.com. And that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost 3 decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. All right, thanks everybody for joining me today. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brands on Twitter at PWTorch and at MMATorch. And yeah, check out pwtorch.com every day. Oh, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/pwtorch. And until tomorrow after SmackDown, and VIP members, stay tuned because I'll be doing a full rundown of Raw with thoughts on all the segments on Raw on tonight's program and a chronological rundown of the show. So if you watch the show and want to know more about what I think about all the segments on the show, not just the ones we talked about on the live cast with Pat and the callers today, or if you didn't see the show and you want to get filled in on what you missed, that's what the Wade Keller Hotline Monday Nights is for. So that's coming up. I'll be recording that momentarily for VIP members. Same thing tomorrow, SmackDown Livecast, and then I'll do the VIP Wade Keller Hotline reviewing SmackDown. That'll do it for me for today. Again, thanks to our callers and your continued great support of what we do here at pwtorchlivecast.com. If you missed any recent shows, you can catch up at pwtorchlivecast.com. It makes it really easy to find past shows. If you missed the Al Snow interview last Thursday, the feedback to that's been just absolutely tremendous. I thought it was a good interview, but I have to say, honestly, I didn't expect the kind of feedback that has flooded in since then. But on Twitter and on email, just people, I mean, some people saying it was the best interview they've ever heard, and they've heard all of them on the live cast. Some people disagreeing with some things that Al Snow said, which just sparked some good conversation also. But it just is one of those must-listen interviews. So if you didn't check, if you didn't hear that yet, refresh your RSS feed and scroll down a few shows, or you can access it at pwtorchlivecast.com. I would urge you to do so if you didn't. It was a it was almost like a college lecture of sorts from somebody who's been around for decades, been in a lot of different territories, played a lot of different roles in wrestling, on air and off air, and has some strong points of view. And it is an educational interview, and I think a thought-provoking one and a debate-stirring one. So check that out if you haven't yet. That'll do it for me for today. Until next time, Wade Keller, signing off.